Hey, Art History Babe Nation, Art History Babe Ginny here, coming to talk to you about our New Year's giveaway. This giveaway includes a Diebenkorn book, a Klimt puzzle, and a few other goodies. To be entered to win, you must write us a review on iTunes, take a screenshot of that review, and DM it to us on Instagram or email it to us at arthistorybabes.com. The winner will be selected on New Year's Day. Enter now for a chance to win. Thank you. Goodbye. From Cabernet to Mollet, they're here to slay the art history babe.
Hot takes.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Jen.
I'm Natalie.
And we are the art history babes.
And we're doing a hot takes episode.
This is exciting. Ooh. I'm looking forward to doing this. So this is a kind of a different thing.
Yeah,
for us.
We've kind of done episodes like this before, mm-hmm. Where we delve into something a little less art history related. Like our election feels episode was a hot takes type situation.
Yeah.
But it's something we want to do a little more often, every once in a while, every once in a blue moon.
Yeah, you know, there's just things that all y'all tend to go apeshit over, and we should talk about it.
Yeah, or just, I mean, sometimes we just really like things.
Something,
and we want to do an episode on it. And
when it's basketball season again, we're going to probably
it is basketball season.
Oh, shit.
It's been basketball season for a while, babe.
Yeah. Like,
where you been?
A month.
Okay, a month. I just finished telling you guys about how November's been insane for me.
That's okay. We'll let it slide. It happens.
Our Warriors are not, I mean, they're fine.
What have they been doing? I haven't even been watching.
They're not playing as well as they normally do. I mean, they're fine. They're doing well. I'm sure we'll make it to the playoffs. But, like, we've lost a handful of games, which is not our use, which is kind of a bummer. But we could do a hot takes NBA episode.
We will.
Yeah, I'm definitely down for
that. I want to talk about all of my boyfriends in the NBA.
But yeah, so hot takes episodes, you know, every handful of weeks, we'll throw one at you where we talk about something else that we're into and then probably try to connect it back to visual culture. Because as we have explained, we live in a very visual time, and most of the stuff that you like probably connects to visual culture in some way. So this is a fun way.
Let us tell you how.
Yeah, this is a fun way to help you understand why art history is relevant and also just talk about other shit we like.
Yeah, we just want to talk about stuff that we like, to be honest.
This is a life hack, this podcast is.
We like stuff.
That should be our new
theme song.
Just our art history babes. We like stuff.
Yeah.
But this hot takes episode, we are going to dish on Stranger Things.
Yes.
Because if there's anything everyone's going apeshit over, it's definitely Stranger Things.
Yeah. You know what's crazy? When the Stranger Things whole shenanigans came out last year, I remember being like, that's stupid. And for literally no reason, just
that's just fucking dumb.
For no reason, just because I'm like a judgmental asshole, and when everyone's freaking out about something, I'm like, that's dumb, even if I haven't even checked it out yet. This, I'm being like so real right now with you guys, like this is something that I need to work on. But I finally watched it, like, you know, last year after the hype. So maybe like a month or two after it had already been out. And I was like obsessed with it.
Of course.
I was obsessed with it. I couldn't stop watching it.
Good.
And I was dying for the second season. And when the second season came out, I went to work the next day on like 2 hours of sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Because I literally like stayed up and watched like a bunch of it.
Yeah. I remember it came out and I was working overnights that weekend. And when I work overnights, like I don't really have time for anything but sleep and work, like because my days are so long. But I somehow like snuck in all these Stranger Things episodes just to like get through them. It's such a good show.
Oh,
if
man.
You don't think it's a good show, like you can fight me. Like
you
it's such
reevaluate.
A good show.
Yeah.
It's good in every aspect. Like we're going to talk about the plot and the visual aspects of it, but like It's just so well. The music is great. I don't think we'll probably have time to get too deep into the music, but it's so good.
Go to
Spotify and listen to the playlist, because they did one based on, I'm sure they have one on season one, but I know for sure they have one on season
two. Yeah, they have a Stranger Things playlist, and it's really fun. It's like a mix of 80s songs, but then also like the original Stranger Things music.
Yeah.
So good.
And like Toto. Like, how can you hate
is
on
Toto
it?
In Stranger Things?
Yeah,
really?
Dude. That's like the whole, I think that it doesn't really come up in the second season, but the first season, Africa.
Oh, yeah. I guess I haven't watched the first season since last year, so. But yeah, so we're just gonna, this episode, we're gonna kind of split it up. First half, we're gonna talk a little bit about our feelings on season two. Second half, we're gonna dive into a little bit of sort of visual analysis, talk about how Stranger Things has captured the zeitgeist of the 1980s in just an absolutely amazing way. Like,
so good.
So impressive.
God.
Okay, so let's just dive in. General thoughts. What did you guys think? Oh, also, hold on. Before we start, spoilers. We're going to just say whatever we want.
Yeah, if you haven't watched it, like, get out of here.
Yeah, what are you doing? Like honestly.
Go watch it right now.
Don't listen to this episode and then send us an email being like, you ruined the show for me. I listened to the entire hour and a half and you ruined it.
Don't you dare.
Do not.
Don't do it.
You've been warned.
Yeah. So there's going to be spoilers. We're going to say whatever we want to say. So go watch the show and then come back and listen. Okay. General thoughts. What do you guys got?
Okay. So picking up on the very last scene from the very last episode of the very first season of Stranger Things, I knew.
We're starting from the very beginning.
I knew that some shit was about to go down when Will went into the bathroom and puked up that nasty ass little slug.
Yeah, little slug, man.
I was like, that's fucked. Some fucked up shit's gonna happen in the next season.
You don't just go puking up slugs.
No, and like,
and expect that nothing's gonna happen.
I know.
Like, something's
right?
gonna
you
happen
know,
with
and
that
it's
slug.
Like, dude, and this is something, you know, and this is kind of like a trope that I've noticed in a lot of, especially like horror film, when someone's kind of like tripping, you know? Mm-hmm. So Will, in the whole like first part of the second season, is like tripping out. Like, he keeps having these flashbacks to the Upside Down.
Definitely.
And he doesn't like tell anybody. Like, he doesn't want anyone to know that this is still happening, right? And that made me like kind of annoyed, because that's always something that I feel like happens.
Well, he does tell people, but when he tells people, he has to go to the doctor, and he doesn't like
right going
he
doesn't
want
to go to the doctor. He doesn't tell anyone that he puked up that little monster.
Yeah.
Okay.
When you puke a monster, you gotta tell someone.
I'm sorry, you guys, but if I puked up a giant slug, not the news would hear about it. I would
the
be
whole
calling,
world will know.
Yeah, I would be on the news, like telling people about it. Like, so anyway, Will, that was your bad. I don't know what you were thinking.
He just wants to live a normal life.
Yeah,
I
know,
he's
he doesn't
just
want to be called Zombie Boy.
Yeah.
Aw, that made me really upset.
He just wants to live a normal life, and that's why he doesn't bring up this shit. He's just like, fuck it, I just want to live my life.
Kids are cruel.
Yeah, when he got called Zombie Boy, that was some bullshit. Who does that? If you like, I'm sorry, but if someone goes through like an insanely traumatic experience, right? Why the hell would you make fun of them for it?
You know what, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because it's set in like the 80s, but it doesn't it just seem like school isn't like that now? Or
oh,
am
it's not. It's
it,
not.
Like,
no.
Am I tripping? Because
no, you're not tripping.
It wasn't even like that when I was a kid.
No, that's actually something I've noticed too. So like in the 80s and 80s movies, which, you know, this is so brilliantly based on, those social constructs of like the cool kids were mean and it was cool to be mean to people, and like the jocks were mean and the preppy girls were mean,
right? Like the nerds get swirlies.
Yeah,
and
mm-hmm.
None
no.
of that happened at my
no,
school.
That by the time I was in high school was phasing out, and I want to partially credit that to Mean Girls. Mean Girls came out when we were in middle school.
Mean Girls was a cultural phenomenon.
And Mean Girls is great. We should do a Hot Takes Mean Girls.
Oh my god.
Totally.
I love Mean Girls.
Yeah, so. Who doesn't? But Mean Girls is because it addresses all those things, but it does it in such a smart way that is like, this is fucking dumb. And like that came out, yeah, when we were in middle school. And I think it was a cultural phenomenon, and everyone, like, at least high schoolers woke up, because when I was in high school, it was not cool to be mean.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was not, like, no. if you were picking on people, that did not make you popular. Like,
yeah.
I even hated the word popular. Like, yeah. I felt like I didn't like the stigma of the word popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because to me, it, like, implied that you were mean.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it implied exclusivity and thinking that you were somehow yeah. better.
At least yeah. at my school, the quote unquote popular people were people who were involved and who were nice. Yeah. Like yeah. if you were involved in shit and you were nice to people, that's what made you popular, which is, like, I think a way better model than the 1980s. Oh, for
sure. Right.
Like,
I went to a school that was like a weird mix. It was like right next to the Air Force base in town, and so we weirdly had like a bunch of kids from like other countries, but then also poor youth from the neighboring lower income kind of city. So a lot of drugs, there were shootings and things like that in the city. And so for that kind of like strange accumulation of people mm-hmm. that were going to this high school, bullying wasn't really a thing. And yeah. I mean, it did happen, but I remember a lot of the fights that would happen at school were because, like, someone was being an asshole and yeah. someone else was coming in to be like,
don't be an asshole.
Stop
yeah.
it.
Yeah, exactly.
I got into a ton of fights in high school, like physical fights, and they always were because someone was like picking on like one of my friends yeah. and I was like, what?
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't know.
So I think
Zombie Boy.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely, and that's why, you know, they do such a good job, is that is a very,
it's like a generational thing.
Oh,
I think.
It's a hugely yeah. generational thing. And it was, yeah, I mean, any 80s teen movie you watch is really based around that trope, this idea of the popular jock and
yeah.
kind of being an asshole and stuff. But Stranger Things does a beautiful thing, because we have our boy Steve who goes through an amazing transformation.
Steve. Yes.
I love Steve. Everyone loves Steve after this season. Who doesn't love Steve? Right?
Yeah, I feel like
Steve,
at the end of season one, you love Steve. And then at the end
season one, I was all right with Steve.
I was like, whatever.
I was like,
about
okay,
Steve.
All right. You kind of yeah. redeemed yourself. And then season two was like, I fucking love Steve.
Yeah.
Steve was really great. And I love that he had this sort of transformation.
And I loved his crazy character arc. Like, he went from hotshot dating like the pretty girl mm-hmm. to being best friends with Dustin and just like protecting the kids. Like,
yeah,
it's
like,
such a weird character
so cool.
arc, but
it
I love
really
it.
Is. Yeah.
I love it so much.
I need to just say this.
say it.
I don't like Nancy, dude. I just don't.
What don't you like about Nancy?
I don't like Nancy because I feel like she just makes like bad decisions, and then it's all like, oh,
like
Nancy.
What bad decisions? I'm curious, because I mean, she's not my favorite, but I don't dislike her.
She didn't like Steve really, but like got with him, right? Because he was like sort of popular.
She liked him.
I mean,
liked
sort
him.
Of. But
she was into him.
There was like this, you know, sweet boy. Jonathan.
Ah, Jonathan.
Just,
I also love Jonathan.
And
I love Jonathan.
I do too.
And Jonathan was like so down for her, and she hella rejected him to get with Steve, who at the time was a douche. Like, let's just acknowledge that Steve was a douche in season one.
Yeah.
And then, you know, has this character development and you know, so now we love Steve. But
now we all love Steve.
I felt like Nancy was a douche herself to Barb. What happened to Barb? We all forgot about Barb.
Except we didn't. Okay, so like, I agree. Season one, we all forgot about
yeah,
Barb.
Like Barb.
At the end of season one, it was like, what the fuck happened to Barb?
Yeah, like nobody cared.
It got swept under the rug.
Yeah, but I feel like they rectified that in season two.
Especially Nancy, because yeah. Nancy is like, that is her driving force the whole season, is to
avenge.
Thank you. To avenge Nancy, not Nancy, to avenge Barb's death.
Exactly. So I think they totally rectified that. And I think that probably came from listening to fans. They were like, oh, shit, Barb. We forgot about Barb.
Yeah. And so it became a meme.
So I think season two, the Duffer brothers were very cognizant of the fact that like the fans were like, what the fuck? You know,
yeah.
What about Barb?
They were like, okay, we got to do something about this.
Yeah. So they, you know, so Nancy, yeah, avenges Barb in a very real way. And, mm-hmm. and so in that sense, I liked Nancy's character development in season two because I think, I guess, I totally see what you're saying with Nancy because there are things about her that maybe aren't the most likable. But what I like about her character is that season one, she wants to date the hot popular guy and she kind of ignores Jonathan, who is my boy. Like, I love Steve, but I really love Jonathan.
Jonathan?
He tugs at your heartstrings. Oh. Yeah. You just want to give him a hug and, like, boost his confidence.
He, like, honestly, I feel like I connect to Jonathan more than Steve. Like, Steve is the type of guy I would totally flirt with and be like, oh, this is so great. But, like, Jonathan is the type of guy you connect with. You know?
Mm-hmm. He's the guy that you obsess over.
He's the guy you have deep conversations with at 2 a.m. But I understand, like, Nancy's a high schooler. Like, I remember being 17 and you know it's not easy to like those are two very different personalities and they both have very different things to offer.
Yeah.
And so I think it's not crazy that she went with Steve, especially with the end of season one. Steve kind of comes back and is a hero. It makes sense that she went that direction. And then, you know, just like anyone would after a traumatic situation, she tries to ignore it a little bit. And then it comes back full force. I think that's a very human thing.
I think that's the... Because I'm kind of with Jen. I wasn't... Nancy's character doesn't speak to me on a deep level.
Yeah.
But when she had that moment of, like, crying and, like, breaking down in the bathroom and being like, this is all bullshit, I was like, yes, Nancy.
Okay, I, like...
Team Nancy.
I've watched that multiple times. I've watched that
scene
multiple
times. And it's horrible.
Times.
What she says to Steve is... She steps on his heart, but I...
It needed
to
happen.
Yeah, I feel for what she's saying and what she needed to get off of her chest.
I also just like want to shout out to Natalia Dyer, who is the actress that plays Nancy.
Yep.
Like,
great name.
Yeah, it is a great name.
Great initials.
I was not
nice.
I was not, you know, like crazy about her. Like, I thought she was fine. She's amazing in that scene. That scene is brilliant. She really nails the like drunk, emotional dish all of your feelings. Like, nails it. That scene is so good.
It's bullshit. It's all bullshit.
It's bullshit. Like, she does such a good job.
She does.
I don't know if she just like practiced getting really drunk and emotional, but she
like videotaped herself and then watched it back. I hope that's what she did.
She
was like, I'm going to get blacked out drunk. Someone videotape this because I need to know what I look like.
Yeah, she nailed that scene. I was so impressed by her in that scene. But no, I get it. Like, the character of Nancy is not one of my favorites, but in season two, she had moments I really liked a lot.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I'm team Nancy Jonathan, but the chemistry is still not there for me.
I feel you.
And
I didn't think
that
at all.
Jen's like, what the fuck?
Like, no. Sorry.
Theoretically, I get the chemistry. I get why they would be bonded and why they should be together. As far as the acting and watching it play out visually, I just didn't get a feel for it.
That's fair. That line by what's his face? What's the detective's name? Shit. What's the detective's name?
Hopper.
No.
No. The one weird guy.
Yeah.
What the hell was that guy's name?
The journalist.
I loved him.
The Mr. Detective
God,
guy.
Who's that actor?
Yeah,
that
he's
guy is
in
so
like
great.
So much shit. Why can't
I know.
Think of his name?
I don't know. I'm on the internet movie database and I don't see him.
The internet movie database. Maybe it's because I'm kind of
drunk. What was his name?
Drunk.
Yeah, we've been drinking.
We've been drinking.
Jesus.
You keep looking. His character has such a good line in regards to the Nancy Jonathan thing where he's talking about he's just calling them out about how they need to go have sex. And he says, he was like, plus you have shared trauma. And it's mm-hmm. like, that is the realest.
That is
shit.
So real.
That is the realest shit. Like, there is no better like aphrodisiac than like shared drama.
Damn.
Like, that's so true. What is his name? God damn it.
Isn't it Murray? Murray.
Murray?
Murray.
What's the actor's name?
Murray Bauman. And the actor is Brett Gelman. I've never heard of him before.
Where is he? That doesn't sound right.
It's him, dude. Yeah, it's him. He got his start doing improv and stand-up comedy in New York City.
Oh, yeah, it is him. What else is he in?
He quickly developed an improv group called Monkey Dick. Of course he did.
He's in other shit.
He was
shit.
In Human Giant. Human Giant from MTV. He's done Funny or Die stuff.
The other guys, that's what I know him from.
Anyways, he's a funny guy.
Lemon. Oh, yeah, he's in a lot of stuff.
He's great. Oh, he was in two episodes of the revamp of Twin Peaks.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Still haven't watched that. I need to. Another hot takes. Twin Peaks.
Oh, look at his face. I love him.
I love him, too. No, I really liked his character, as brief as he was, and I think he had a great moment.
He was instrumental.
In trying to make that whole Nancy Jonathan thing happen. But I agree. There was a lack, maybe, of on-screen chemistry.
And I'm a little bit judgmental about that, I gotta say. When actors have like great chemistry, it just enhances everything.
Oh, definitely.
So very much.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than like a kiss on screen that's supposed to be really intense, but the actors just don't vibe.
Have you guys seen Aloha? It's a great movie. It's one of those just like where they threw a ton of like top-notch Hollywood actors into a movie. It's like Rachel McAdams, Bradley Cooper, John Krasinski, like.
Shit.
Yeah, like
I haven't heard of that.
Bill Murray, like all
what?
Like so many huge names, and it's a great movie.
Is
it's
it directed by
storyline.
Wes Anderson?
It sounds like a Wes Anderson
right?
movie.
It's a great movie. Like the plot's great, and you want to love it. But in the story, Emma Stone's in it too. Emma Stone and Bradley Cooper are supposed to be like the big love story of the movie. And the chemistry's just not there at all.
That's a bummer.
And he's supposed to have like an old flame with Rachel McAdams, and their chemistry's so much stronger that it almost ruins the whole plot because you almost want them to be together more.
Right.
And you're not supposed
Dude,
to want that. So chemistry.
Speaking of chemistry, Bob.
Oh! Bob!
Rudy!
Bob!
Bob!
Oh, man. So.
Fuck, I love Bob.
I loved Bob
I
so much.
Love
Bob. Bob was the best part of season two, hands down. Fight
what
me if you don't agree.
I hope it doesn't suck.
Yeah! Oh, I loved
Bob.
Bob
was perfect. So, okay, so today, instead of sleeping, which I badly needed to do, I watched multiple episodes of Beyond Stranger Things.
Oh, shit, I haven't seen that.
It's on Netflix. It's fun. They just interview each episode. They have like two people from the cast and then the Duffer brothers, and they just talk about Stranger Things.
Is the episode like happening and then they're talking?
No. They're just sitting at a table.
I gotcha.
And it's actually the dude from Community. The bald dude from Community is the host for some reason.
Okay.
I know. I don't know. But
maybe he's just a big fan.
Yeah, he is. He goes nuts for it. And it's him. And then they'll have two characters from the show, two actors from the show, and then the Duffer brothers are there, and they just talk about the filming and moments in the show, and they just hash through it. And each episode there's new people, and I watched like three episodes today, and they talked about Bob and how Bob is played by Sean Astin,
who is Sam.
Yes, who is Samwise.
From Lord of the Rings.
He's Samwise.
And Rudy. Did you guys
He is Rudy. Fuck.
He came on the screen the first time and Matthew goes, Rudy.
So the thing is, they wrote Bob with no intention of Bob being what Bob ended up being.
Bob was amazing.
And Sean Astin sends in a tape auditioning for this. Like they, you know, did not seek him out. We're not expecting him to audition. He sends in a tape auditioning for this, and they're like, yeah. Like, so they cast Sean Astin, and very quickly, Bob took on this whole new life. Like, he was supposed to just be kind of the doofy boyfriend of
of Winona.
This is so reminiscent of Parks and Rec and Andy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's very similar. They wanted something nice for, I forget her real
name. Joyce.
Joyce, yeah. Winona. They wanted, they wanted her to have like a nice dorky boyfriend.
And he certainly was that.
Oh, yeah.
To balance out all of her trauma.
Exactly. And but that was baseline. Like, that's all he was supposed to be.
Right.
And then he took on this whole new life where he became very lovable, and then he kind of became a hero of the story.
He was amazing.
And he, oh my God, I loved him so much.
Me too. The reason why I brought him up in regards to chemistry, though, is I just wanted, like, I just, oh, like, it made me so cringy. I don't know how to explain what I was feeling, but he and Joyce's character, just, I felt like the chemistry was not there, like, in the show, like, on purpose.
I almost feel like that worked, though.
Right. Because, like, you know, he's...
He was in love with her.
So in love with her. Yeah. Like, and he's all making out with her in the back room. And that
and
whole,
like,
that scene is, she's kind of like, like, like her face, like her lips are like sort of pursed together. And meanwhile, he's just falling all over himself. Like, he loves her so much.
But I think that worked because in so many ways, after all the craziness she's been through, she just wanted a nice, stable guy. And so I think she was maybe, pushing aside the chemistry for the sake of having a good guy.
You know, it was like, it's like that thing when, like, a girl just always dates, like, the douchebags that treat her like shit, and then she finally dates, like, a nice guy, and he's treating her so well, and she's like, this is great.
this is so good. For real. And I mean, but in a, like, real life way, I think it was also honest, though. I mean, like, imagine, I don't know, I was putting myself in both season one and season two. I would put myself in Joyce's shoes a lot.
Word.
Because I almost feel like Joyce got a lot of shit at both seasons for being, like, over the top. But are you kidding me, though? Like, that is an insane thing to go through. Can you imagine losing your child, like, your child being, like, abducted or disappearing, and then you're 100% confident you, like, hear him, like, in your walls?
Oh,
like,
my God.
And no one believes you.
Yeah.
Like, it would be just the worst thing ever. And so I did not think she was overreacting ever. I would be losing my mind.
Yeah.
And after going through all that, getting your son back and still trying to, like, maintain normalcy, honestly, I would not be concerned with chemistry at that point. I would just want someone to hold me at the end of the day.
Yeah. Like, Joyce
she wanted
a really
normal.
Good job.
She kept insisting she wanted normal. Yeah. And she, it seemed like she was super conflicted between wanting that with, I want to call him Rudy, with Bob. and not wanting to kind of bring him into her craziness.
Right.
Like, she was trying to protect him for the longest time.
That scene where he comes over with all the little games.
Oh my God.
He comes over with all the games.
Little brain teasers.
And she meets him.
That made him feel better when he was sick as a kid.
She meets him outside and she's like, no, like, you shouldn't come in. And he's like, well, I got all these games. Like,
I love him
so
much.
Make sure to give Will these little games. And he thinks that Will's just, like, got a flu. And meanwhile, he's inside, like, possessed by the shadow monster.
He's trying so hard.
I know. And then he solves this crazy map. Like, what?
And that's such a fun scene. When
I know.
He's working through the map and figuring it out. Because I love that it's just, like, he's so sweet. And so unsuspecting, but he's so smart.
He walks in and sees this crazy shit all over the walls and doesn't immediately think, this bitch is crazy.
Which
like,
is maybe
I'm
why,
gonna get out of here.
Which is maybe why they needed that weird power imbalance where he was so in love with her.
Yeah,
and
where
she was
like,
kind of like,
okay, like, this is what I wanted my entire life, so now I'm gonna make it work.
But we need it, because that's the only way to believe that he would be that like mellow about it and not ask a thousand questions.
He was
wrapped around her little finger.
Oh, he was so
to the end.
Good.
He
and then
the
he just gets eaten.
Dude, that was like the most tragic bullshit.
I cried, dude.
I did too. I was like,
you saw it coming though, right?
Okay, so I did. I did see it coming.
I didn't.
No, okay, this is what happened. I 100% saw it coming. And then I thought they were going to maybe surprise me and go the other way.
Dude, he was like, almost there.
Exactly. So I was like, okay, he's gonna, like, there's a part where it's like, he's definitely going to die. And then they gave me so much hope that I was like, I think they're going to surprise me. I think they're going to go the other way. I don't think they're going to kill him. And then they fucking killed him.
That shit was on purpose.
Especially since in those scenes, it's like Bob and the doctor. So you're knowing that one or both are going to die. But then, yeah, you're right. When they start to let Bob kind of make his way out and he's heading for the door and there's light at the end of the tunnel.
That was so upsetting.
Boom.
Well, dude, dogs. And then Demi, you know, dogs. His downfall was that he saw Joyce and was like,
so symbolic and tragic.
And then he gets eaten.
And then Joyce watches him get eaten by the Demi dog.
As if her shit wasn't already traumatic enough.
That poor woman. God, that dude. poor woman.
Yeah, I gotta say, I was more upset for her maybe than I was for Bob himself, just because I'm like, how much trauma can one person
honestly
endure?
I was upset about Bob.
But no, like,
I just wanted Bob to make it.
Honestly, I agree with Nat, because yeah, not only how much trauma, but like, she brought him into this. So that's gonna haunt her for the rest of her life.
And trauma.
Her life is completely ruined.
Yeah, her life is fucked. If it wasn't already, it is now. Like, if they come back with season 3 and Joyce is fine, I'm gonna be like, no,
that's wrong.
Fine.
Yeah,
Joyce will never be fine.
Season 3 needs to be all about Joyce's mental breakdown, dude. Like, she finally snaps.
Yeah, for real.
That's just all it is.
Yeah.
But let's talk for a minute. Just because we're on the subject of character dynamics, and there's so many good character dynamics. Let's talk about Eleven and Jim Hopper.
Oh,
that was so relationship
sweet.
Is so good.
Eating
and
their
interesting
little
and,
TV dinners.
Oh my god. And Hopper's just trying to take care of her, but even like the volatile aspects are so good.
Well, yeah, they're, it's like he has a teenage daughter.
Yeah.
You know?
That he lost, like, yeah, because it's crazy. He symbolically lost, not symbolically, he literally lost his daughter when she was a child. So he lost that chance to have a teenage daughter, and then he's getting it back. But her power is just wild. And
yeah,
those scenes were so uncomfortable, but like, those are the two powerhouses of the show.
Oh yeah.
Like, she has the literal power and he kind of has this, I don't know, symbolic power imbued by the city and that he's like helped save them in the past.
Definitely.
And, you know, he has this prestige and they just won't back down.
Yeah. They're both stubborn as shit.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, those super uncomfortable scenes are so good and so necessary. like the scene where he's just like losing his shit on her because she ran away is so good. And so like, it makes you like, it made me so mad. Like, I got really upset with Hopper because like, just as someone who's worked with kids a lot and stuff, like, I got really upset with him for being so overtly angry with her.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, it comes from this place of protection, and it's totally understandable. And
he's so mad because he cares so much.
Exactly. And he, you know, he apologizes later on, and that's such a real thing. Like, what parent hasn't screamed at their kids just because they were worried about them, you know? Like, that's so real.
Yeah.
And I think that whole dynamic, and then like when Eleven is just tired of being trapped in the cabin, and that scene where the windows shatter.
That was dope. Oh. And they used real glass.
Yeah.
That was the one episode of Beyond Stranger Things I watched, is the one with Millie Bobby Brown and what's his name? Finn Wolfhard. And she was talking about how they used real glass.
That was real. That wasn't special effects. They blew that shit up.
That's dope.
I know, right?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, and what's his face? Jim Hopper, so David Harbour, who plays Jim Hopper, didn't want a stunt double. He did that. He like that glass blew up behind him, and like, he did that scene live, which is Like, can you imagine being on set and be like, we're just going to blow this house up and you're going to be in it?
I just love the commitment level of all the actors. Like, they all seem to care so damn much. And that's what makes it so good.
I agree. Okay, like, this isn't anything new, but can we just, like, talk about how insanely talented those child actors are?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They're all so good.
All of them, dude. They're just so good.
Every one of them is so talented. And I'm like, how did you assemble such an amazing cast of child actors? Because child actors can be really hit or miss, you know? Yeah.
They're all amazing. I love Lucas.
Lucas is great.
Lucas is so great, played by Caleb McLaughlin. I really, really loved Lucas. I thought he was amazing. I mean, all of them are great. Dustin's
my boy.
Dustin. I love Dustin.
Who doesn't love Dustin?
If you don't love Dustin, get out. And obviously,
I loved the scene. I felt like a very... Okay, I felt multiple very real connections to Dustin. Same. One of them was the scene where he's in the library and he's like, I'm on a curiosity voyage and these are my paddles.
He's so cute.
I need my paddles. I felt
that's
like
the best line in the whole show.
I know. And then he's running out of the door. He's like, I need my paddles. I loved that so much. I was like, yes, take your paddles, Dustin. I could relate to that on such a real level, but even more so. And it's so complicated, but I really felt connected to Dustin's continuous protection of
Dart.
Yeah, of the little slug guy of Dart.
Dude, and we all knew.
Yeah.
That is going to be a problem.
We all knew from the very beginning.
That thing is growing way too fast.
You're fucking up right now.
One, the fact that he found this weird little guy in his trash can, and despite the fact that everything he had been through with the Upside Down, his instinct was like, I'm going to keep this thing.
For real.
Yeah.
And then just like throughout the entire show, he formed a bond with it and he protected it. And like, and then there's a, you know, a point in the middle of the show where it's clearly
a daemon.
It's a daemon. When it, you know, eats his cat.
That's my mom's favorite line, is the part where he goes, I'm sorry, but you ate my cat.
And so there's definitely a part in the show where it's clear that, you know, Dustin, you fucked up. But then, like, I love that it comes back around full circle, because the fact that he forged this bond with
it saves them.
And he's so brave, and it's such a beautiful moment. And it's something, I don't know, that of all the moments, I think, in the show, of everything in season two, I connected with very deeply, is this desire to save something that maybe someone else would not give the time of day, or the desire to save something that seems harmful, I think is such a beautiful impulse.
It's so sweet of him.
The unwavering loyalty.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, and maybe that's a Scorpio.
He was so
in
confident
me.
In his bond with this thing that no one else understood, but his confidence in that bond like trumped whatever anyone else said. He like felt it so deeply, and he was in.
Exactly. I think that that might be like the Scorpio side.
I totally
of me.
See how that like, just gets you.
Because we are loyal as fuck. If we love you, it's till the end of time. Like, that's just the way it is. So this sense of loyalty and just not giving up on this little guy, even though he did some fucked up
right.
shit.
Even though it's clearly a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Is something that I guess I understand at a very soul level. So like of all the characters in the show, I felt, at least this season, I felt the most connected to Dustin.
I want to talk about the characters that I didn't feel connected to.
Did you have something else to say about Dustin?
Oh, I was just going to say that I feel like we keep talking about his loyalty to Dart, but we should also mention that once he realizes he fucked up, he also comes back and like fully takes responsibility for betraying
Yeah.
The, what do they the call
party.
It?
The party.
The party. And he says he understands if they want to kick him out. And he just he bares his little soul to Lucas. No. And it's just so apologetic.
Don't you dare kick him out of the party.
And of course, sweet Lucas doesn't because he loves his boy.
He's a great guy. There's so much friendship.
There is. It's I just love the friendship. His loyalty Corey's just goes so deep to everyone.
Okay, like speaking of me crying, I bawled my eyes out alone in my little cottage when fucking Eleven shows back up and that moment between her and Mike.
Right.
It is so pure. It is the purest thing.
Dude, and they were so like fucked in that moment. You know? And she just shows up and just saves the day.
And
like,
just that moment of them like Mike seeing her again, and it's so pure. They love each other in such a precious way, and I lost it. I just bawled my eyes out. I was like, oh my God, you Duffer brothers, you did it. You did it. Such a good scene. And I love that they waited so long to bring Eleven back.
What was it like? It was 343 days or something.
Oh my God, it's so sweet. Oh
man.
I love it so much.
There were so many moments in this season where I just cried.
Yeah.
I cried a lot. We'll talk about some more crying moments in a bit. I think that we should talk about the controversial characters. The new characters, Max and Billy.
Max, I like. I think she's a good addition. Yeah. I think she's fun. I think she's a good character on her own, but doesn't like overshadow the Eleven character.
Right.
She kind of has her own vibe.
She gets kind of the short end of the stick throughout the season.
Mm-hmm.
No one really wants her around except Lucas and then Dustin kind of, and then there's like
that Dustin definitely does,
right?
He just doesn't want to show her.
I saw the most hilarious picture and I should have sent it to you. It was the poster for Mean Girls, and over Lindsay Lohan's face was Max's face, and then all three of the Mean Girls were all Mike. And it just said, you can't be in our party.
That's so good. That is going to be like when we do our social media blast for this episode. That is it. Yeah. We're taking that meme.
I have the picture in my phone.
Okay,
it was so funny.
That's good.
You can't be in our party. So
Mike was not having
Mike
that
was
shit.
Like, get out.
Because he loves Eleven.
Yeah.
And no one will take her
place. Exactly.
It's so pure
in such
a young middle school immature mean way.
Yeah.
but it's genuine.
It is. It really is.
His little heart is shattered into pieces.
Mm-hmm.
All those scenes of him sitting in the little fort area trying to talk to her. I'm getting teary-eyed.
Oh my.
But let's talk about Billy, because
he's son of a bitch.
Oh God. Okay, Billy gives me like complicated feelings, because like at first I was like, damn, right? Because the actor is hot. I'm just gonna put that out there.
Okay, like
the
actor is hot, but at first I didn't feel that way at all, because from scene one I'm like, this dude is a douche.
I guess, but you
from
know that
moment one I was like, I hate him. Like literally, like a visceral hate.
Dude,
every time he would come
I
on the scene,
you.
Matthew and I'd be like, ugh.
I hated him from moment one. I didn't give a shit if he was hot. Like,
I feel
I did
you.
Did not care.
I mean,
dancing in the mirror to himself.
He's so gross.
Chasing the kids.
He's so gross.
Like everything he did.
I have very poor taste in men, apparently, because I was like, he's a douche. I love him.
See, no, yeah. I hated him every single
I wanted him to
the
die.
The only... I wanted him to die.
There was a follow-up to that, but I'll go after.
I wished a slow, painful death upon him.
Well, because I wanted him to die the whole time, and then near the end, they give us his background. Something's going on over there.
It's the Mean Girls meme. Oh. No, I, like, the only scene where I even remotely was, like, felt something for him was the scene where his dad was...
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
That humanized him.
Exactly. And so my issue was I was wanting him gone the whole time. I was like, oh, this is the seasonal sacrifice that is going to happen.
Yeah.
And I my true thought was that, you know, the scene where he and Steve go head to head. I thought that scene was going to happen and that Steve was going to like kill him. Like or the Demodogs were, I thought he was going to be a goner.
Yeah.
And then they humanized him and I was like, nope, they're keeping him around. Mm-hmm. Like they made us care for him a little bit. They made him, made us see
they
him.
They made us empathize with him a little
bit.
And as
soon as they did that, I knew he was sticking around.
I just want to point out a couple of things about Billy and why I think he's important. And I'm hoping that they're going to do something more with him in season 3. They can't drop this.
No, he's
because
still,
they put it out there.
He's still alive. Like, I mean, he can't just disappear.
No, he's alive, and I know that he's not going to be dead, but the but
Natalie wants him to die.
I did. That's what I'm saying. As soon as they humanized him, I was like, all right, they're going to turn me.
I still wouldn't mind if he died, though. I really don't
like him. There are some things about Billy that I want to put out there, okay? A, I think that Billy is gay. And is attracted to Steve.
And is
I think
repressed.
That there was a repressed homosexuality towards Steve, and he's overcompensating with his aggression.
All right.
Okay. That is like watch it again.
All right.
There is
no.
That,
I'll
that
take
is there.
It. I like it. I like it.
So we're gonna, you know, so there's some. There's his father is just like completely soaked in toxic masculinity.
Oh, he's a son of a
bitch.
He
calls his son the F word, which I don't even like to say that word. I'm even gonna say it. You guys know what I'm talking about. Billy may be wedged firmly in the closet. There is this unaddressed. They don't address it, and it bothers me that Billy is a racist.
Oh, Billy. Well, they do address.
I mean,
it.
They address it in the sense that he's like, I don't want you hanging around
they
with that boy.
To it, I bet it'll be.
He's a hardcore racist.
Yeah, it's gonna be.
But I wanted it to be.
It will in season 3.
Like,
I bet.
More concrete.
Yeah, yeah. Fair. Don't like, you know. I didn't like how it was sort of like, oh, he might be racist.
No, he's racist.
He's
if
racist.
If you didn't know, he is a hardcore racist.
If you didn't pick up on that.
Yeah.
Adding to the
take a second.
He's a piece of shit argument.
Right. And then also just this, like, I don't know if anyone else picked up on this, but there was this like really, I mean, obviously he was very like threatening to the little sister, mm-hmm. the little stepsister, but there was something like weirdly like rapey to me about it. I don't know. It just like made me really uncomfortable. I just felt really uncomfortable with like how physically aggressive he was towards his little sister. And how he felt like this control over her. Mm-hmm. It was, I don't know if I was just projecting something onto that, but I was like, ugh, this makes me uncomfortable.
I mean, I was super uncomfortable with that relationship.
So much, dude.
And it was clearly, it was a combination of things because obviously he had all this anger and he blamed her for even the fact that they were living in this
town.
Yeah,
there's a lot to come out in their storyline, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I don't think that's an unfair assessment because I think given all the other things we know about him, he's crazy aggressive, he's overly sexual. Like, if he's angry, it makes sense that he would be sexually aggressive, mm-hmm. you know? So, like, I think that your instinct or that your feeling that was kind of there is accurate.
Yeah. I was just like, no.
To
no,
be
no,
fair,
no.
I hate him. I still, I hate
Corey.
I hate this character.
Towards him.
I hate this character so much. I really wanted to see Steve like annihilate him. I respect the actor though. That is some good acting.
That was good acting.
To be that.
What's
that,
his name again? Dacker?
That unlikable.
Yeah.
Daycrit.
To be that that unlikable and that disgusting, that's good acting. So shout out to you, man. Like,
Dacker Montgomery.
I hate your fucking character, but you did a good job
with
it.
If I'm mispronouncing that name, someone please.
He was also a Power Ranger.
Dacker Montgomery?
In the reboot.
Is it Dacker?
I don't know.
Dacray?
I don't know.
He's
but
Sagittarius.
Oh,
well, there we go.
There it is.
That explains it.
But fuck, your character is just the worst.
He's the worst.
Literally the worst. I don't know. Maybe we'll see a character arc like we saw with Steve and he becomes redeemable. I don't know. I don't know if they should do that, though. I don't know if that's a good move. So I think we've kind of made our way through most of the characters anyways. Let's talk quickly just about the visuals in the show. And yes, the fact that it is really just a piece of art in the sense that it fully appropriates and represents the zeitgeist of the 80s. Like, the Duffer Brothers are meticulous and intentional, and every scene is like you're able to trace it back to an 80s movie.
100%. And I've heard this argument, and a lot of people have offered this up as a harsh criticism of especially season two, is that it's just a bunch of like recreating scenes and sort of like sets and things from old 80s movies, like horror flicks, etc. Mm-hmm. I think that's okay.
I agree.
Honestly, if that's...
I totally agree.
Like, yeah, I don't think there's anything
wrong with
that.
No one's done that, really.
Yeah, because it's not like they're just piecing together old 80s movies in this like kind of haphazard way.
Right.
Like one, the plot line's entirely unique. Entirely unique. But yet it's so tied in to the 80s. Like, just things like the upside down and the Demogorgon, how they're related to things in
Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, Dungeons and Dragons. Like, the whole plot line is deeply related to things that were very important in 80s culture, 80s American culture anyways. But at the same time, the plot is entirely unique. Like, you did not see this plot in any 80s movie. It didn't play out like this. It didn't happen like this. So they have their own story that they created. That in itself is a creative endeavor. Like, they made something all its own. But then they take images from all these 80s movies to literally recreate the feeling of being in the 80s in a way that people that were alive in the 80s, people that maybe grew up watching 80s movies like us, I was born in 88, so I just caught the tail end there, but like grew up with a lot of these movies. It's visually the fact that they were able to frame by frame match images from all these movies. They created a world that made you feel like you were in the 80s again. Like, and if you can't recognize that, like, or appreciate that just at on its own, like, you're missing the point.
Yeah, and that's not easy to do.
Yeah.
Like, down to, I mean, the very first thing that I noticed before even seeing any of these YouTube videos that go in and show you the exact scene side by side, and we'll post it on our website.
There's a really good one
that we just watched.
Yeah, it's a video on Vimeo, and we'll post it on the website. But whoever put it together did an amazing job.
Where super good.
Side by side, they found scenes in the first season of Stranger Things and found scenes in 80s movies, 80s and 70s movies that parallel.
The very first thing that I noticed when watching the first season of Stranger Things is even just like the filters on the cameras, like the lighting is from 1980s mm-hmm. film. The Duffer Brothers, yeah, like what Corey said, like extremely meticulous and extremely intentional in every aspect of capturing this 80s feel to the show. And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think that they were being unoriginal. I think that it's actually very original that they crafted an entire series out of trying to emulate the feel of these 80s films.
The only other thing that I think has done this, and I'm giving a shout out to this because I think it's super underrated, and it bums me out that it's so super underrated, is another Netflix show, The Get Down.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh my
I heard that's really
God,
good.
It's so very good.
Dude, my coworker told me that was really good, and I haven't watched
it. It's so good.
It's like 70s, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So The Get Down is based in the 70s. It's directed by Baz Luhrmann, who I adore.
Yo.
I love his style so much. But it does a very similar thing, but in a just like a very Baz Luhrmann style of recreating 70s imagery, and it does it differently than the Duffer Brothers do it.
Word.
But for some reason, the Get Down is just super underrated.
Yeah, I haven't even seen it, but I have heard that it was very good.
It's so good. And if you haven't watched it, you need to.
I don't have anything to watch right now.
Yeah, it's a fantastic show, and it bums me out because I don't think it's coming back for a third season because it didn't.
That bums me out.
Yeah, because it hasn't got the numbers that like Stranger Things does.
Damn, y'all, go watch it.
Go watch that shit.
It's weird because the music's so good in The Get Down, but I think the fact that it's a musical series is probably what turns a lot of people
away.
Sing? The stigma.
Oh, yeah, it's a musical.
It's a musical, okay.
But it's good. I mean, it's 70s music.
It's a good musical. Okay. Like, yeah, it's
70s inspired music, yeah. I should say.
Mm-hmm. So disco and rap and like, it's basically
evolution of rap. Like, the first days of rap.
It's tracing the evolution of these very important musical genres. Yeah.
Cool.
It's such a good show. So obviously if you're listening to this, you already watched Stranger Things. So go watch The Get Down next. But yeah, I can't think of another example of an 80s inspired show or movie that has done anything even remotely to this
or a show that's
caliber.
Committed so strongly to embodying like the zeitgeist of a decade or like a time period. I mean,
it's the specifics.
Yeah, they did their research so deeply, and I think that's why you can't fault them, even if they are borrowing, and especially for us art historians who preach the fact that borrowing inspiration from predecessors in art is not frowned upon in art history or in the arts. Like, you borrow until you find your own style and whatnot. And I think the Duffer Brothers are perfectly, they're not borrowing until they find their style. They're borrowing visual references and they're making it their own style of TV show. And I hope more people do this because it turned out really, really well. I mean, down to like the Eggo boxes and the Three Musketeers wrappers. Like, they get everything perfect and they leave no detail.
I remember those wrappers.
The only thing, okay, so I'm going to throw this out there. I did notice one detail and I could be wrong. So I'm putting this all out there for you. There is one moment, it's when Will is at the doctor and the doctor asks him what his favorite candy is. And Will says Reese's Pieces. Reese's Pieces weren't out in the 80s.
Does he say that. Reese's Pieces?
He says Reese's Pieces.
I remember when Reese's Pieces came out. Yeah, that was in the 90s.
Right?
Like, we were like eight.
So they missed that one. I caught it.
Ooh.
But
maybe they meant you to.
I don't know. But no, I agree.
That's
though.
It. They're canceled.
I noticed the Three Musketeers wrapper too, though. I was like, oh, fuck, that's good. That's a good detail. Mm. So yeah, they, for the most part, minus.
You guys, 1977.
Shut
Pieces?
Up.
Where do you?
Maybe they like revamped them when we were kids or something.
Maybe.
Yeah, they must have re.
Because I don't remember
marketed.
Reese's Pieces being around when I was
They're
little.
They're in E.T.
Are they really?
Yeah.
What?
Yep.
Mind blown, man.
Yeah.
Mind blown.
Mars,
when
Mars
did
Candy
Reese's
Company
come out?
Paid them to have it in E.T.
When did Reese's come out, though? Just regular Reese's.
Please hold. While I do some investigative research.
Because Reese's, that's crazy to me. That
this
Reese's
is tripping me out.
Me too, because yeah, maybe it was like a revamp or something, because I distinctly remember there being like a big thing.
Oh, get
Pieces.
Ready for this. 1928.
What?
You guys thought you knew about Reese's.
Apparently not.
Guess
damn.
Not.
Yo, I want to know what those 1928
Dude,
Reese's
I'm telling you, they
like.
Did their
They're
homework.
Probably good. Like super like real ass peanut butter with the chunks. Little chunky
they
peanuts.
They did their homework.
Yeah, not even just like referencing the 80s. But so the Duffer Brothers were born in 1984. So... Mm-hmm. You know, they were children in the 80s and early 90s. And so they, you know, maybe a little younger, but they have distinct memories of growing up during this time.
I was born in 93 and my childhood memories are all rooted in the 90s. Like,
yeah,
I feel that.
Yeah. And mine are mostly in the 90s, but like I have plenty of childhood memories in the early 90s, which are similar to the 80s. And like the Duffer Brothers in Beyond Stranger Things talked about how, you know, in the show, like the boys are always just like running around on their bikes and their parents don't know where they are and how that was the norm. And I remember that shit. So like, that's so real. When I was growing up, my mom did not know where I was.
My parents like, had no idea.
Yeah. I was like, Mom, I'm going to go. And she was like, okay.
Yeah. Like- I used to ride my little pink Magna or something.
The
ones that you buy from like Walmart, like the shit bike. That it doesn't even have actual brakes. You have to like pedal backwards.
It totally had one of those with the white tires
and the little sparkly pink bike. I used to just ride around. My parents had a house that was like among a bunch of developments. Mm-hmm. So just a bunch of like half built houses that they were taking forever on. And I used to just go just ride my bike on you know, loose wood with like nails and bricks and stuff. It was very dangerous.
I would literally like, especially in the summer when I didn't have school, I would like get up in the morning. Like my mom worked a lot, so a lot of times she wasn't even home.
Dude,
but
same.
Like,
I was by myself.
Yeah, I was by myself. But it was like the norm that I would be like, I'm gonna just go, like we lived in an apartment complex, so I had other apartment rat friends, you know.
Nice.
And like, and we would just run around and we'd go, we'd find little patches of like wooded area.
They were
and,
actual like, rats.
Yeah, for real. but no, it was like I didn't have a cell phone or any way to track me. My mom didn't know where the fuck I was, you know. Like,
I didn't get a cell phone until I was 17 years
either,
old.
Dude, 17 was the age.
Damn.
Crazy. But just like that, it's funny because like to people who grew up in the 80s and the 90s, that was the norm. But now we're at a point where, you know, teenagers that grew up in the 2000s, like that was not the norm. Like if you were born in 2000, your parents not knowing where you are is just not the norm.
Yeah, that's insane.
like that's crazy. So it just, it really represents a cultural shift in a very real way. And just once again, going back to the amazing acting abilities of these children, the fact that they can do that like this isn't a reality they've ever experienced.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
They can make it happen.
Yeah.
And it's not, they do such a good job of really capturing what it was like, even though that's not something that they're familiar with,
right?
You know?
Dude, can we talk about how these are children and how there's like this creepy ass shit going on right now?
Oh yeah.
All over social media where people are like super sexualizing these little kids.
Bullshit.
It makes me feel so uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah,
you haven't heard about this?
So real.
So Millie Bobby Brown, that's her name, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how what the order.
Millie Bobby Brown.
Millie Bobby Brown.
But not just her, it's all of them.
Oh, I know, but what didn't they name her like the sexiest like actress of 2017?
Who?
Just the media. I don't know. I'm gonna look it up.
Yeah, look it up. I didn't hear that there was any official like, but just in general, there's been a lot of sexualizing of these kids and all over, like they show up at these different appearances and they're dressed like little adults. Like they're dressed in suits and low cut dresses and things. And, you know, and they're all beautiful kids. Like they're going to grow up to be beautiful humans, but like they're children. And yeah, it's become pretty pervasive. Just this like, quote unquote, playful, because I don't think this is playful, but like playful sexualization of like 13-year-old children.
Nah, it's gross, dude. And
it's
so
gross.
It was a W magazine named Millie Bobby Brown as one of the sexiest actresses of 2017. And so
that is so fucked up.
It's gross, dude. And so that's happening at the same time that a 27-year-old model, Allie Michael, posted a picture of Finn Wolfhard with the caption, "Not to be weird, but hit me up in 4 years." Dude, that's weird. Like, you don't get to say not to be weird, but here's, like, my pedophilia, you know?
But hit me up in 4 years when you're, what, 18 and still a child? Like,
yeah.
Can
and
you...
she's 27,
yeah,
dude.
Like, I, bleh. Like,
man,
can
she's
you...
She's looking for attention.
I okay, but still.
No, that's annoying, but I'm more disturbed by the publication calling a child
sexy.
Sexy
bullshit.
Publicly.
Children are not sexy and calling a child
sexy. The fact that no one in that company stopped and was like, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this because this is entirely inappropriate. Yeah. Like, you'd think someone would kibosh that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would understand if they said, like, Time's most influential young adults or something, or, like, Time's most influential whatever, and they became something like that.
Yeah.
But to call that, to make them sexualized objects.
Exactly.
And the thing is, this is something that's always been done. I mean, think about it. That's why child actors always, like, get this stereotype of becoming fucked up, is because kids are sexualized and have been in Hollywood forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of the culture, and not that it's okay. I think we should stop it. But the fact that people are comfortable publishing things so overtly about it now, like, hopefully, yeah, like, now people start speaking out about how wrong it is. Because before, it was, like, that seedy underbelly where it happened.
Exactly.
But people at least knew enough to be ashamed to say it, like, publicly,
like,
or...
Like, the Olsen twins were never called sexy at the age of 12.
Or,
like,
not publicly.
Are
you know,
sure
maybe
about
some
that?
Gross,
no, I mean,
creepy...
Yeah, I'm sure they were called sexy, but they weren't called sexy on, like, a publication.
Exactly. So the fact that people are comfortable doing that now means we're moving in the... I mean, maybe it just means we're moving in the right direction because it's going to become public, and then people are going to hopefully push back.
Hopefully, I mean,
that's the natural
are.
Order, is where people are like, this is not okay.
Yeah.
And the majority of...
People are super...
Because that's... Come on, guys. Like, we got to draw the line somewhere.
People are super frustrated by it, and rightfully so, because it's gross.
It's gross.
I don't...
That's bottom line.
Like, I was watching them, because, I saw that, and then I was watching them on Jimmy Fallon the other night, and they, you know, they are, they're super cute kids and so sweet, but they're kids. Like, just the way they talk, and they're so, just, like, all over the place, and, like, it's so clear how... They are children, and they still act like children, and they should act like children. That's what they are, you know?
Like, I don't like that.
I,
like,
don't
why
like that
are
either.
They making does her look like an adult woman? Like, she's 13. You know what I looked like when I was 13?
Oh my God.
A nightmare.
I was a
metal mouth. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, just my lip was snagging on the braces all the time. I didn't know what the hell to do with my hair. Like, I was a disaster.
Oh, so was I.
And every 13-year-old should be a disaster. Like, that you need to go through that.
And the only person a 13-year-old should be attractive to is another 13-year-old.
Right. And even, like, then, it's like, we don't know what's happening.
We don't know yet, but I think I'm attracted to you.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and we should clarify, too, that the show does a really good job of not sexualizing
any
of the kids, all the way up to, like, Nancy. They don't even, I mean, even... Like, in the scene where she loses her virginity, I mean, she still kind of has a very, like, girlish thing about her.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's kind of innocent. And, like, the sex scene with Jonathan, they don't show, like, a sex scene.
They don't
try and sexualize them. And, you know, they don't really, like, bog her down with a ton of makeup. Or, like, I think the Duffer brothers and whoever is in charge of dressing them and doing the makeup for these kids, like,
They
do
look,
a really good job of
they're
making
doing
them
a good job. Like,
on the show,
not,
they appear like kids, and it's unfortunate that outside of the show that can't carry over because
they're kids. They look like the ages they're supposed to be. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. I don't even think the high schoolers are sexualized at all.
I mean, Billy was a bit much.
His
pants were too tight.
Yeah, but
that's not good for you.
But that was also part of his whole thing, was being this overly sexual,
testosterone
driven.
I'm just really looking forward to season 3 when Billy comes out of the closet and is just happy,
right.
You know?
I just want him to be happy,
dude.
I mean, I don't at this point, but if that is the arc it takes, I'm open to it.
Corey's like, whatever.
Whatever. I hate him. I hate him so much. So Stranger Things is great.
We loved it.
General takeaway, don't you dare sexualize those children.
Do not.
Yeah.
Just
do not
stop.
It's
so gross.
It is. It really is.
That's canceled.
Like, I
want
to go back
done.
To 30 minutes ago when I didn't know that was happening.
Oh, I know. That's so well, that's crazy that you didn't know that was happening. I guess I just spend, like, way too much time on the internet because
I
was
feel
like,
you.
What?
I was very invested in it,
I was
too.
Appalled.
But I'm appalled, but I'm also happy because there's been a huge backlash against it.
Dude,
like, so many people have been like, don't you dare, you know? So that's good. That's positive.
Hollywood and the media, everything's just crazy right now. It's like,
and now we get to sit back and watch how these amazing, talented children develop, and I wish them the best. I hope they all remain healthy and that they develop in a positive way.
Yeah, dude. You know what? As creepy as all of that is, I have to agree that it's really good that it's all out in the open right now about how disgusting it is to sexualize these children. I don't think that this conversation would be happening 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
People wouldn't talk about it.
They would not. And I think that hopefully the result of all of these sexual abuse allegations coming to light means that young actors like these children are going to be in a safer Hollywood.
Yeah, definitely. Know? Definitely.
I really hope
Let's
that.
Let's keep putting that out there. That's good. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I think that's a very good thing to end on. A heavy but good thing to end on.
Yeah.
So yeah, Stranger Things. What a fun time. We love it.
Yeah. I can't wait for season 3.
Yeah, it's great. Just take some time to look at the stills and like the beautiful shots that were taken and how much they are influenced by these 80s movies, because it's super impressive.
Yeah, and go back and watch E.T. and Poltergeist and
yeah.
all those guys.
The Duffer Brothers have done something very cool. So yeah, this was fun. It's a fun time, you guys.
Yeah, let us know what you think about our hot takes episodes. We'd
hot
like
takes.
To do more. This was fun.
This was super fun.
Yeah, like I could just talk
yeah,
about
I know, right?
All kinds of
this
shit.
This was so much easier because we didn't have to like do a bunch of
yeah.
research.
We're just like, yo, we watched
we
this
did
thing.
Research. We watched all the show. We just watch stuff and then we talk about it.
We like stuff.
Yeah, we like stuff. Art History Babes, are we going to do like a spinoff, just like TV podcast? That would be dope.
I mean, we could.
We could.
Let us know what you think, friends, and keep an eye out for more hot takes episodes. And let us know what you think about Billy and about all of these kids and everything that's happening in Hollywood.
Jen
really
know. Wants to know what
I
you
just
think
want
about
to know
Billy.
What you guys have to think about that. Yeah, I know. I'm like the unpopular one because I was like, ooh,
no, I like,
he's
I
dangerous.
I like your subversive take on it. I mean, they're characters.
No, I liked,
so
I liked some of your ideas.
They're You're supposed to be dynamic.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening, friends. I really love all of you.
Bye.
From Cabernet to Monet, they're here to slay the art history bay.
Have a good time.
Hello, dear listeners. This is Ginny, and I'm here with our friend Zach Clark.
Hello.
You've heard him before on a few of our episodes, and today he's here to talk about a project he's working on called Great Hope, which you can become a part of and become involved in, which he's going to explain right now.
So Great Hope is a show that I am working on that will be at the UMass Amherst Union Gallery in February of 2018. It's going to be a collection of work that I'm making about where myself and others find hope and victories they are currently celebrating. But the show is also going to exist as a open call print exchange and is open to anyone who makes an edition of 12 works. So if you're a printmaker, I'd love to hear from you to be part of the show. All the work will then be distributed out to everyone as a print exchange. If you are not a printmaker and just want to share your stories about where you are currently finding hope, I would love to hear them. For both participating in the print exchange and just letting me hear your stories, you can go to nationalmonumentpress.com. Some more information will be there. You can find me on Instagram, at Zach Clark Is, or you can text 510-969-9443. Thanks, and I hope to have you as part of the show.
Right on. Great Hope. Check it out.